Okay.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Twanda Black, your host. And the question is, should there be limits on the First Amendment? And what does the First Amendment say? It says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Joining me this morning, I have Gene Polosinski. He is COO of the Newseum Institute. Good morning to you, Gene. How are you?
Good. Good morning, Twanda. Thank you for having me on the show.
So, well, first of all, tell us about the Newseum Institute.
Well, we're part of the Newseum in Washington, which is a privately financed museum that looks at all five freedoms. We're halfway between the White House and the Capitol building right on Pennsylvania Avenue. Mm-hmm. You can spot us because the building is nine stories, glass-sided, except for a 75-foot plaque in stone on the front of the building with the 45 words of the First Amendment carved into it. Mm-hmm. We like the idea of transparency, except we thought those 45 words ought to be a little more permanent than that.
Yes. Yes, yes. So you did a survey about should there be limits on the First Amendment? And so explain, you know, what the survey was asking exactly.
Sure. We've done a survey every year since 97 asking questions like that. And first we ask if the people who take the survey, do you know the five freedoms? Mm-hmm. A third of people can't name any, but we get past that, and we say, here they are. We do what you just did. We read the First Amendment. And then we say, in your opinion, does the First Amendment go too far? And what we found, I think, was some additional proof of something we first saw after the 9/11 attacks, was in the aftermath, even months later, as many as half of us were willing to say we have too much freedom. Let's put some limits on it. Mm-hmm. But that reset after 9/11 got as low as 1 out of 10 instead of 1 out of 2, which is what it went to right afterwards. Mm-hmm. We have the Boston Marathon bombings a couple of years ago. Jumps right back up to 40%. Well, this year it reset to 19. So what the lesson I think we're seeing now as this latest survey is, when we have those shocks to the national psyche like that and attacks, that we need to be extra cautious not to give away too many of our freedoms for people who say, you know, if you just do that, we'll be a little bit safer, because we quickly reset ourselves as an American public. Mm-hmm. But the laws are permanent, and they're harder to get off the books once they're there. So just a lesson we're beginning to see as a result of these surveys.
You know, also, especially freedom of speech, people are saying, I think it's really out of hand, and I know we can't reel it back in, but people say some horrendous things out of their mouths in the public, for the public eye, the public ear, and it's horrendous.
Oh, they do. But, you know, we settle those best in the court of public opinion in many ways rather than the court of law. You know, the antidote in law to speech we don't like, I think, is best expressed by Supreme Court Justice Jackson back in the 40s. Said the antidote to speech you don't like is more speech from you, which I, you know, that's a very nice marketplace of ideas. But, you know, also by having the freedom to debate in public without government being able to shut that off, the Confederate flag is the controversy is a great example. Mm-hmm. You know, we did two surveys this year. One on that issue was just before the Supreme Court ruling on the Confederate flag on license plates and before the tragedy in Charleston. Mm-hmm. We went back in the field just last weekend, and we asked Americans about it. And I thought it was really interesting that, you know, we found, as did a lot of surveys, that for white Americans and even Hispanic Americans, more associate that battle flag with heritage or Civil War than they did racial bias. Mm-hmm. Among African Americans, it was, you know, 80% as a symbol of hatred. But what was interesting to me was that a majority of Americans across the board, white, Hispanic, and black, all said they were absolutely approved taking it off government buildings and down from flagpoles, public flagpoles. Mm-hmm. They even approved of Target and Walmart and people taking it off the shelves. So I think what we're seeing is this reset, again, in the court of public opinion, where it says, look, even if as a, you know, white or Hispanic person, it doesn't carry that same meaning to me, I now get it. I understand, finally.
Right.
Maybe.
Some people had to die, but okay. Uh-huh. Yeah.
150 years later, but they get it. Yeah. And they're saying, you know, if it offends you to that level and for that reason, let's take it out of public view. Let's put it into, you know, maybe in a museum or somewhere, but take it off of particularly government buildings where that's supposed to represent all of us. And I look back as a white American, and I say, you know, I look back at that society that where finally people understood that minstrel blackface shows were deeply insulting. They weren't just funny or entertainment; they were insulting and racial humor and insults that, when I was a child, might have been used in what was called polite mm-hmm. society today are absolutely horrendous, not seen that way. Maybe as a society we're making that spin. So I found that really interesting in this year's survey, that even though people still don't see it that way as a majority, they're willing to say, look, but that offends my neighbor, offends the person I work with, offends my friend. Let's take it out of at least government buildings,
and
it's okay even if it's off the shelves.
There's some cultural sensitivity a little bit today.
More than there was, and I don't want to be Pollyannish.
Right,
we have a long way to go as a society.
I noticed that Paula Deen is you know, took a hit in Twitter, posting the picture of her and Ricky Ricardo, her son, in brown face. She's just not culturally sensitive, you know.
Well, you know, again, when I talk about these numbers, we're talking about the majority, and the sizable minority still doesn't get it. You know, but I think when we look at the long-term trends of the country, we're seeing this tolerance, we're seeing this acceptance, this understanding. You know, again, the Supreme Court in the same-sex marriage, we found that most Americans don't think that's going to have a long-term impact on religious liberty. Because even in that decision, the court said, look, individually, no priest or minister, no individual church is going to be forced to perform these ceremonies if they don't want to. Its government may not stand in the way if they choose to do it.
Right.
So, again, you know, the public is making an interesting parsing here that sometimes in the shrill debate, we don't get that point of view.
So let's, for the last couple of minutes, talk about freedom of press. I think sometimes the press goes way too far. And that they share a lot of information they don't need to share. But the way technology and the need for more, I think the consumer has the need for all the details. I mean, we share some stuff that sometimes, especially for national security, I'm like, why are we sharing that? You know, why is that a part of the news?
I think you put your finger on the next great debate about freedom of the press.
Yeah.
You know, we find that consistently now for years and years, people say the press is biased, but they're actually more comfortable with that, whether it's Fox or MSNBC or a show like yours where people say, I have a point of view. This is me. You know, here's information. People are becoming, I think, much more comfortable with that. The question, I think, as you put it, and one we'll be studying over the next few years, is that issue of fairness, of how much do we need to know. You know, we did a program at the Newseum Institute after the incident in Baltimore, and the gentleman who John Watson, who's a professor at American University in journalism, said, instant is no longer news. Instant is now marketing, and it can be harmful.
Yes.
It doesn't show the right things. You know, people had this impression that Baltimore, my old newspaper, USA Today, where I worked, ran a headline saying, Baltimore is burning. And I mean, I couldn't have been more critical of us. I said, look, some buildings in Baltimore were on fire, but Baltimore is not burning.
Exactly. Baltimore is not on fire like that. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so, I you know, again, I think people are skeptical now. Mm-hmm. The good news is that we have access to so many more sources of information than we ever did, that we can go on our own. But it puts more responsibility on the user, the consumer of information, to look around. And again, that's an issue we're going to be taking a look at, media bias, media completeness, the nature of news over the next couple of years at the Newseum in Washington, D.C.
You know, we still have to be responsible journalists. That's the bottom line. And I think there's a push not to be as responsible these days. Tell folks how they can learn more about the Newseum Institute.
Well, you can go to newseuminstitute.org. If you want to find more about the survey, you can do hashtag SOFA15, S-O-F-A, for State of the First Amendment. So you can look either of those places for more information about the survey and about what we do at the Newseum in Washington.
Gene Polosinski, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Twana. I appreciate the opportunity to chat.